TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
Good save, Pavlik, rebound.
Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets, a division of Bell Media.
If you want to know the real deal about the three, we're going to take you with triple chop. We're going to bring you up to speed.
TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk on this Saturday afternoon. I'm Dell, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can also follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Joining us on the program this afternoon, Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch in about 30 minutes' time. And at 1:30, the new president of hockey operations for the Columbus Blue Jackets, John Davidson, is going to join us.
I thought for a second Drew was about to say...
Oh, I don't even think my mic is on. Right? There we go, Timmy. Oh,
that would have been a better show.
It's Ezra, by the way.
What about who's not here?
I thought for a second Drew was about to introduce the new president of the United States, Barack Obama. Wasn't sure what was going on there.
That's another 10 days away from there. We'll see if we can get Obama on for next week's show.
But Drew, you're here.
I'm here.
Ezzy's here.
I'm here.
Richard's here.
Can we get on the phone line here?
Remus?
What?
Where are you?
I thought we started at 12:30 today.
No, that's next week, Remus. That's next week. We're starting at 12:30.
Where are you right now?
You sent out the email that said 12:30 because of Barclays Premier League.
That's next Saturday. It's called reading comprehension. That apparently, you know, you weren't able to handle that. It was pretty clear. I think it said something about note for next week's show that it's at 12:30, not this week. I know it's hard to get you out of bed in time for noon.
Reem, are you in bed?
Yeah, like,
because it sounds like you're in a sewer right now.
Yeah, Drew couldn't come to the pre-show meeting, so Ezzy didn't show until about 11:20, and you're nowhere to be found.
I thought we were going on at 12:30 today.
Well, in that case, you can hurry up and get down here anytime in the next half an hour. We'll see. I still don't think you'd make it by 12:30 at this point, but
that's right, exactly. You still usually come about half an hour before before we're on the air anyhow for the pre-show meeting.
Okay, wait, before I go, what candy do you guys want?
I want those gummy worms.
Gummy worms?
Yeah, and they're on you this week.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll get the candy.
We'll see you soon, Reem.
Reem, make sure you get a coffee for yourself. Yeah. You sound like you just woke up.
Splash some water on your face.
Bye, Remus.
See ya.
Well, there's Remus. He's late, obviously, but, you know, whatever. Good effort on his part. It's hard to get out of bed for noon. I'm not sure how he does it weekly on the Rona Roundtable.
Even if the show was to start at 12:30, he still should have been somewhere
either.
Not in bed.
Yeah. He wouldn't pull that stuff with Munns and with Rick and with Bayak, let me tell you.
That's right.
I was telling you, I saw Munns at the MTS Iceplex on Thursday, and he was saying, Michael's doing such a great job, he's working
You said,
hard.
Who's Michael?
Yeah.
What?
You said, who's Michael? Because, you know, we call him Remus, we don't know who Michael is.
Right. Remus, and he said, yeah, he's doing a great job, he's working hard, he's always producing our show. It's funny, Saturday's...
Yeah.
You know, his bread and butter, Illegal Curve, comes along and he's in bed.
Yeah, bed and butter.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. That's pretty funny. Hey, who wants to talk CBA?
Let's do it.
Let's do it, because it's just so exciting. Each and every week, the CBA negotiations continue on, and each and every week, there's still no news. So they canceled November, as we were all expecting them to do. Earlier yesterday, they canceled November, as we were all waiting for, and they did it. The Jets lose 4 home games in November, 9 road games. The home games that they lose, I believe, is Montreal, New Jersey. I'd have to look it up again. I think Toronto and Nashville, I believe, if I'm not mistaken off the top of my head. Those are the 4 home games the Jets lose as a result. You know... I had the pleasure to sit down yesterday. I was talking with some people that I don't normally talk about hockey with, and they all said to me pretty much the same thing, that there's a deal there to be made. Everybody knows there's a deal there to be made. What's it going to take for these people to finally, you know, come around to it and say, let's make that deal?
Well, first off, just to clarify, though, the home games that they lose are the Predators, the Devils, the Canadiens, and Leafs. Just to clarify, I think you got most of those right.
I think there, I got all those right.
There was right 13. There was 13 games. You're right about that. Well, Drew, I think, you know, Sean Gordon wrote about this in the Globe and Mail. We had him on a month ago, and he was talking about the point of diminishing returns.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And that's kind of where we're at right now. You know, obviously, the news this week was extremely depressing. There were no formal talks, and everybody was waiting for Tuesday and Wednesday for there to be some type of significant proposal, either from the NHL, the NHLPA, whatever, something. And there was nothing. And obviously, they've canceled November. But, you know, even though everything seems extremely depressing, and because there's no hockey, it obviously is depressing. But I would suggest to people that, you know, this to look, you know, on the other side of the coin and look at why this can be positive.
Mm-hmm.
Negotiations are about to get very serious, and they have been already, but now you've got 2 months canceled, essentially. And it's possible if they strike a deal in the next couple of weeks, you could still have hockey in November. There's still the possibility that there could be something along the lines of a 60 to 70 game season. But right now, you've got a situation where the players are a little bit scared. They know that the season isn't canceled, but they know that, you know, we're getting very close to half the season being mm-hmm. canceled, Richie.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we know that there's pressure on, you know, in my opinion, if you want to look at who, you know, which side has more pressure, because both sides have pressure. I would say the NHLPA, there's more pressure on them now because we've had 2 months canceled and we're quickly getting to the point where we might not have a half season. We know there's not going to be a full season. But, you know, we're 6 weeks away from the possibility of there not even being a half season.
Well,
so it's good. The pressure is mounting, which means these guys might get a little bit more serious here.
It's inevitably on the players, I think, the pressure, because, you know, 50-50 split takes their contracts down. It would be a rollback. But the problem is for the players, if they miss a whole season, I think that will, generally speaking, be, you know, exceed the rollback that it would be this year. So the problem is NHL owners, I mean, sure, they may be losing on tens of millions of dollars, but they still have tens of millions of dollars in there, and they have the asset of the team, and it generally the franchise values grow. So, you know, do owners want to play? Do they not want to have fan apathy, blah, blah, blah? Sure, of course. But the owners have less to lose than the players do. And, you know, for the players, losing a whole season versus going to 50% immediately, not that that's going to happen, but that to them, that's, you know, you can't really do that again. It's and then what's the end game? And the question is only that, Drew, is you missed last time you went and you missed a whole season and you still give a rollback and you still gave in a cap. So, I mean, and the problem also is that the owners, if the season ends up being canceled, the owners are only going to offer less and less down the road.
Let me ask you guys this question. I mean, it's been, you know, the next offer from the NHL. Let's say they're the next ones who come to the table.
Sure.
Do you think that they come with a 50-50 offer the next time, or is this going to, do they start to play even more hardball at this point?
I would say, I mean, I'll let Richie jump in here too, because it goes to what he was just saying, but I think it's more hardball. It's not going to get better. I mean, the 50-50 deal with you know, the first year, what was called the transition year, where, you know, the escrow mm-hmm. wouldn't be affected, that was based on a full season. So, depending on, you know, what your belief is on how, you know, how much hardball they're going to play, the offer's not getting better. That's for sure. That's guaranteed. There's no possible way.
But
there's other elements to this. There's obviously the you know, length of contracts and all that, the revenue sharing. But as far as the percentage of hockey-related revenue,
mm-hmm.
50-50 is the best they're going to get.
Well, that's the end game. And Tyler Dello is a blogger out in Toronto, and he wrote a really good piece on his blog, which Remus will tweet. Oh, wait, Remus isn't here.
We'll
have him tweet it out in half an hour. But anyhow, basically what he did is he broke down, you know, based on the offers presented by both sides, and he put it on a per-season basis. It ends up being they're about $81 million apart based on one of the offers. But both sides' offers, right? So they're about $81 million apart per season. You know, divided by every team, you're looking at about $2-3 million apart per team, per season. So you're really that far apart, looking at the strict numbers.
You're not. And that's what's been, I think,
that's what we've said all along.
And that's, I think, the most frustrating part for all the fans is that not only, one, do they see that there's a deal to be made in that they know what the finished product's going to look like,
right.
But two, they're not that far apart based on the offers that both sides have presented, and they refuse to sit down and really try and find that middle ground between both sides.
And Drew, I think, by the way, I think that's good for hockey fans. The fact that they're not that far apart, it's good for hockey fans who are clinging to the fact that there might be a season, or the hope that there's going to be a season. I don't think at this point at all you can say that there won't be a season. In fact, you know, I would bet more. I bet more money on, not that I bet, but I'd bet more money on the fact that there would be a half season. And the fact is, there's not that much. There's not that many.
I agree, but the problem is, why a half season? You know, why are you getting to that point? That's what I want to know. Why are you getting to that point?
Let me ask you guys this question. And this is, again, one of the things I was discussing last night. Do you think that the players are truly getting good advice from anybody that's supposed to be advocating for them, be it Donald Fehr, be it Steve Fehr, or more especially...
Are you talking about, you know, public comments?
No, I'm talking about privately behind the scenes. And I mean, and especially their agents. Are their agents doing a proper job in really alerting them to what the issues are?
I mean, it depends on the agent. I think that's, of course, it depends on the agent. Obviously, agents' careers, generally speaking, last a lot longer than NHL players. I don't think the agent's necessarily causing an issue. I think Donald Fehr, if he had his way, would hold this thing out forever because he just completely morally opposed to what the NHL is suggesting. Now that's we've come to see that he's, you know, he's still representing his players and he's doing what they want him to do for the most part. I think that's the case, Drew. I just think that he has galvanized the players so to a point where I think it's far exceeds anything in the past that we've seen. You know, the good now, obviously the rocky years, but he's got them all together. So I don't think his advice is necessarily bad. I just think that his tactics take a lot longer to employ. I mean, you know, that negotiation, sort of deadline hunting and all the things that come along with it. I guess when push comes to shove, the question is, to me, I don't think Donald Fehr would be unwilling to miss a season. That's when I wonder what the players do, because that's when you'll see the polling from the players and from a certain part, you know, segment of the players. That's the key issue. When push comes to shove, I think Donald Fehr would say, hey, if they're going to put the screws to us like this, let's miss a whole year and stand by what we believe in. And I think the players will have to decide whether or not they want to sacrifice a whole another year of their contracts and what it'll get and what the end game will be, because will they sacrifice a year of their contracts and get anything more 6 months down the road?
Let's leave it there. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org or give them a call at 204-477-1256. The CGA Association of Manitoba, we see more than numbers. Gentlemen, continuing on the CBA discussions as well,
Hey, that rhymes with CGA, kind of.
CGA and CBA? Yeah, similar. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Continuing, we could maybe even start a rap, like a CBA rap.
Drew, what's your costume tonight?
Deal with that later on in the show. I got to, you know, mull it over a little bit longer. As he's having a housewarming Halloween party tonight.
Just don't say the address on air.
Yeah, please. Don't worry. I won't. Don't worry about that.
You know, that would be really throwing me under the bus.
Yeah.
Or the house.
Yeah, that too. What do you think about this talk that the NHL authorized their, you know, the front office types to talk to players this week?
Really odd.
It was sort of a bizarre story. Yep. From what I understand, none of the players on the Jets, you know, took advantage of that offer and contacted, you know, the management of the Jets.
Weird.
It was, you know, I think they're just trying to, again, sort of drive a wedge between the players and Donald Fehr in that sense. But I think that was maybe a bit of a step too far, that it was inappropriate of them to have done so.
Yeah, part of me thinks, everything that they decide is has a strategy behind it. And whether or not that intention shows as it may be, I don't necessarily think You know, so part of me thinks there's some kind of a tactic here that made them decide to do this. On the other hand, there's been some sloppy moves by the NHL, and you wonder if they maybe opened it up without enough thought and didn't realize the backlash, because what happened was some owners or managers contacted players, and players immediately contacted the player rep.
Saying, hey, what's going on?
What's going on? And so it's an odd ploy, and again, from afar, we don't know all the intimate details, but I think from afar, it's along the same lines as releasing the offer publicly. I think the NHL believes that Donald Fehr is putting his slant on everything they communicate to the PA, and this is their way to try and get a direct communication with the players.
Okay, guys, I just want to say something, Drew, before we move on a little bit here. But I've got a Toronto Star article here, and there was a guy named George Smith who he was quoted in this article about this, and he said, in a true labor management relationship, this would be deemed as bargaining in bad faith by the employer. And, you know, when I saw that, and, you know, obviously it's been kind of perceived as a bizarre move that the NHL went public about this. But to me, this is bargaining in good faith. Mm. And again, this might be subjective, but, you know, we have a situation where the NHL and NHLPA have a history of distrust. I mean, this goes back, you know, what, 50 years, more than that? Going back to when the NHLPA was started with Ted Lindsay, then you go up the, the chronology with Alan Eagleson and John Ziegler, and then through with Gary Bettman, the relationship he had with Bob Goodenow and Ted Saskin. And now you're at a point where Donald Fehr comes along, and to me, one of the huge issues is their relationship and the communication and how they bargain. And obviously, the NHL offer is going to be communicated to the NHLPA anyways, right? The NHLPA's job is to communicate what's happening in those negotiations. The NHL is going directly to the NHLPA and saying, here, we don't have anything to hide. How is that bargaining in bad faith?
I don't think it's appropriate. I mean, it's not the NHL's responsibility
to explain it
to the NHLPA.
That's right.
I mean, the NHLPA, for, you know, whether it's right or wrong, it's their decision to be made. They hire Donald Fehr to represent them. And if the NHL doesn't like that, well, that's not really any of the NHL's business.
That's right.
They have to, you know, they have to still get their message across. But to do so, there's other ways of bypassing Donald Fehr that don't cause as much consternation, like releasing the offer publicly. That's perfectly within their right to do, and that's an opportunity for them to say, hey.
Well, some people would say it's actually not perfectly within their right to do, but I think
Donald Fehr opened up the door for that to happen when he said that all bargaining sessions should be televised.
Fair enough.
And I understand your
point.
It makes no sense.
Who negotiates in public?
But when you're talking about bargaining in good faith or bad faith, I understand that the NHLPA should be responsible, taking care of things.
Pretend you're a lawyer. Pretend you're
I wrote the LSAT. I didn't do very well.
Okay, fine. But you're a lawyer and you're representing...
So I'd love to pretend to be a lawyer. Okay.
You're a lawyer and you're representing your client. And the lawyer on the other side can't bypass your lawyer to talk to you directly.
Right.
If you don't think your lawyer is representing you properly, then you need to get rid of your lawyer. But it's not up to the opposing lawyer to go to you and say and whisper in your ear sweet nothings.
I agree with you. And no, you have a valid point. And I think, you know, the way I look at it, I guess, you know, the NHL has a message to get out of here. The NHLPA is obviously, you know, letting their players talk. We've heard from Ryan Miller, Chris Bartsch was at it again this week. I mean, all these guys are
Chris
speaking.
Chris Bartsch should really just stop talking.
Yeah, probably.
Miller's comment was fine. I thought Miller spoke well. He said, you know, there's
too
much.
He said both sides.
Yeah, that's right.
Chris Bartsch is doing nothing but costing himself a job.
I think so. And, you know, we have a situation, though, where if the NHL is willing to entertain questions because they are the NHLPA's, they're the player's employer. I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing. I would flip it the other way again and say, well, would you rather the NHL didn't answer questions if players had them? And it seems like it's the problem here is I think that, you know, everyone is still, you know, kind of playing a bit of a game here. The NHLPA is saying, well, they signed us to these contracts. You know, Ryan Suter is saying, well, you know, Craig Leopold signed me to this contract. Now he wants to roll back my salary. Well, you know, Ryan, you got a $10 million signing bonus, and your contract is still guaranteed. It's really the escrow that they're going after here.
Well,
it's not. I mean, it's not like they're saying, your $98 million contract, we're going to take that.
No, they are.
right.
They're rolling back the contract. Your $100 million contract is not going to be worth $100 million. And that's the problem.
But it's the escrow.
No, that's not the escrow. The escrow is something different. The escrow is a percentage of each year's salary that they put.
But they tie it together because they're saying they're going to pay him back, but with their own money, right. Therefore...
But if you signed a $100 million contract, you expect to get $100 million, and the NHL is not offering you $100 million anymore, however you want to cut it at that point in time. And that's, I mean, there's a deal to be made. Most fans would, you know, that's the problem.
Yep.
You know, that's what Donald Fehr said. He said, we'll go to 50-50. We'll go to 50-50 tomorrow. You just have to guarantee
that's right.
all the contracts
that's
that
right.
you signed
right.
that are valid. And, you know, I'm not on either side here, but that, to me, does make sense.
Right, and that's why when we went over it, those three options, that was the only one that made sense. Because the NHL...
But the NHL refuses to even start there. And there is a way, there has to be a way, that they can take that offer from Donald Fehr. And I don't care if it's deferred payments or what it is. There has to be a way that they can take that offer and they can make it realistic in such a way that gets the hockey season going.
Again, we've said that all along.
There just has to, you know,
it's a deal there.
Pay it out, you know, take that 7% rollback and take that money and pay it out, you know, at some point over the next, you know, 10 years after that player retires. I don't care what it is. Put it into some sort of savings bond and get some interest. Again, these guys are smart enough and they have enough talent
yep.
on
yep.
both sides to sit down and figure it out.
The fact that they're not meeting, again, we talk about this every week, the fact that they're not meeting is a joke because they've met literally a combined less than, what, 10 hours?
Well, what do you think of the NHLPA saying, you know, we'd like to meet, and the NHL saying, we're not going to meet, you know, because there's nothing to meet about because you won't come onto our terms?
The NHL's being idiotic. It doesn't hurt to get in a room. You can talk about that in a room, confidentially.
Well, and the thing is, Drew, as we know, you know, Gary Bettman has decided to play hardball, and you know he's you could make the strong argument that the owners, you know, fronted by Gary Bettman, there's a little bullying going around, and they aren't negotiating in good faith in the sense that they've come up with a proposal,
well,
and they are saying
the problem
that
is,
that we're not going to talk about anything that doesn't start off with an immediate 50-50.
Well, the problem is
rollback,
and I realize the salaries are tied to revenue, so I mean the freedom within the system is somewhat negated by the fact that it's guaranteed money going to be paid. Right? A certain percentage is always going to be paid.
Right.
Having said that, to limit the player freedom and allow a player to make decisions of where he's going to go and increase that and, you know, limit that freedom further from the last agreement and then say, oh, you know what? We'll negotiate the rollback if you agree to every term that we've imposed in our offer. Increase the age of free agency,
right.
You know, arbitration, cut down entry level years, which I don't understand. But in any event, you know... In any negotiation, if you say, sure, I'll meet with you, if you agree to everything here, I'll meet with you.
Right. That's not a negotiation.
It's completely ridiculous. Get to the rollback issue, address it, and then work out the other stuff. Or work out some of those issues.
Because that's the only issue that's on the table, really, at this point in time,
yeah.
is the rollback. You know, the NHLPA subtly has said, we'll go to 50-50. Once they said 50-50,
that's right.
you knew
that's right.
that they had mentally prepared themselves to go to that point. It's just a matter of figuring out how...
And they're also disagreeing on the expected revenue growth.
Right. I mean, and that's, again, projections and everything else. You can figure
right.
that out.
That's right.
Yeah.
You can figure... those.
Talk
are...
about the whole lawyering issue. I realize Bettman and Fehr are both lawyers. To me, this negotiation has changed from the last one in terms of the drafting, all that stuff. This is an accounting issue. This is an accountant's negotiation,
yeah.
not a lawyer's negotiation.
Right, because yeah. the legalese is sort of established at this point in time.
The system will be the same for the most part.
Right.
The age limits, all that stuff, that just requires a couple of, you know, cut and paste and changes. The issues here are number-wise. They're accounting issues. And so this negotiation is taking a different course than the last one.
I still think, though, Drew, you're right. I mean, you know, they're going to come to an agreement on what the projected revenue is and how to split that up. That I mean, that's what this is all about. And Richie's right. It's about accounting. But as far as these other issues, because we got the hard cap and the owners were prepared, I'll just leave it on this. The owners were prepared to lock the players out for a year to get that salary cap, and then they won. And then the NHLPA won because the revenues went up and salaries went up, and Bob Goodenow was right about that, that revenues were going to continue to grow. Now, I don't think that it's worth missing a full season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just
makes
you
no
know,
sense.
Over, or
makes
over
no
simple
sense.
An extra $50 million dollars a year. It's not worth it.
Let's the question go to again, quickly, I'm getting
right, yeah.
Drew. The question again is, you know, if you're $600 million apart,
yeah.
how much are you blowing this year?
Right. Well, they already, right. just by losing November, I think it's something like $720 million in hockey-related revenue.
They're going to lose in the future. Yeah. They're going to lose now. This doesn't make any sense.
November, I think, is one of the busiest month in the NHL calendar, I think.
Well, the Jets had 13 games.
Yeah.
And I always was a... I know I realized they talked about the American owners in October. They don't love it because the other things are going on. But, hey, I've always thought baseball playoffs, but they're not on every night. NBA hasn't started yet.
Hockey's a good...
And NFL's only on the weekend. NHL's a good... it's a good start there.
When we come back, Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Shortly past 12:30 in the afternoon, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website for all your latest Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from the Columbus Dispatch, Aaron Portsline. Aaron, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks. How are you guys?
We're doing very well as well. Aaron, big news obviously coming out of Columbus earlier this week was that John Davidson was hired to be the new president of hockey operations. JD will join us in about an hour's time here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, from your perspective, was this hiring a complete no-brainer for the Blue Jackets?
Yes, it was that and more. I mean, this is the kind of guy that a franchise in the situation that the Blue Jackets find themselves in, I think this is a real, I think it's got the real possibility to be a turning point in the franchise's history. It's for a guy like that to be available and for him to be willing to listen for the team to say, here's the organization, please take it, save us. Their willingness to do that, his availability and his willingness to come here, I think people might look back on this and say this is really when the franchise began to prosper, or as one NHL executive said this week, this is when the team became real. He thinks that's when people will look back and on this this passage of time. So yeah, it's a big deal for the Blue Jackets. I think it has a chance to have a real lasting impact.
Aaron, how do you think John Davidson's hiring is going to affect Scott Housen, you know, negatively or positively, you know, as it relates to his decision making?
Well, I think it's too early to tell. I do not get the sense that he's going to come in here and with plans to blow things up and to fire people and to change things entirely. That's not how he did things in St. Louis. People are going to have different opinions on this, I'm sure. I don't think it's deserved here. I think Scott Housen is a guy who deserves to be in the NHL in a high position. Now, certainly the team that has finished 30th in the league and has really taken a bad turn these last 3 years suggests that something's missing. But I think most people agree that what's been missing here is not a new phenomenon. This is a team that since it started, it has turned its franchise over to people who have not done that job anywhere else before. Doug McClain had never been a general manager or a president until he came to Columbus. That's a lot for a first-time franchise. Scott Housen had never been a general manager until he came to Columbus. There was a point early last season, or two seasons ago, I guess it would be, where you had to get all the way down. You could go all the way down through the assistant coaches, and nobody in this organization had done their current job anywhere else. This was their first crack at it. And as much as it's noble and it's great to give people an opportunity, by gosh, you do need people who have done it before. I don't think John Davidson comes in here and cleans house. I think the idea is to add John Davidson, to get them up to snuff with other teams in this league, not as a replacement for somebody else, but as a guy who can forge a new path here. And I think he might even be bringing people with him, adding people as he did in St. Louis instead of just subtracting people from the mix.
Aaron, you wrote in the Columbus Dispatch about, you know, John Davidson evaluating to begin with, as you just mentioned. Does his timeline and maybe patience for success not correspond with the team's fan base and their expectations for a winner?
Well, yeah, I think patience is the word that sports fans hate more than any other, right? They may think they have it. They don't have it anywhere. I mean, it's not just Columbus. Do the fans here want to wait to win again? Well, no, of course not. They want to win immediately. But I don't think anybody who follows the Columbus Blue Jackets and looks at the roster and the situation says, we ought to be able to win right now. They realize that there's some work to be done here, that maybe they're not as far away from being competitive as it appeared last season when they were 30th in the league, 9 points out of 29th. First time they've ever bottomed out like that. There's not a sense that they're quite that far away, but there's an understanding that people that it needs to be done the right way, that there is work to do. So you know what, he buys himself a little bit of time. I think any franchise does when they make a change like that at the top. John Davidson will take the bullets now for the next couple of seasons. But I do think people are okay with taking a measured approach if they believe that success is on the other side. And that's the sense that I get here.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, on that point, you know, how has this hiring been received in Columbus? Has it been viewed favorably by Blue Jackets fans? Or alternatively, because of the lockout, are most people sort of turning a blind eye to hockey in the Columbus region?
Well, I think it's been received very well. I think it has been muted by the lockout. I think, you know, a lot of people are saying it's great once they get going here, finally again, to have John Davidson, but you know, people are angry here like they are anywhere that the people in charge of this game can't quite get it together and actually play games. There's some frustration there. It's sort of like, you know, getting a bike for Christmas and you can't ride it until June. that's the feeling that a lot of people hear. They're excited to see what John Davidson can bring, but they know it might be a while until they actually realize it.
Aaron, as you know, the 2013 NHL All-Star Game is scheduled to be played in Columbus. Do you think now that the NHL has canceled the games through November, you know, they're going to cancel the All-Star Game regardless of whether or not there's a season?
I think the All-Star Game is on life support. Yeah, the league won't say it. I mean, it's like a lot of other things. Why would they say it until it's absolutely known? But I can't imagine the game being played. It has not been canceled. But, I mean, look, they're not going to play 82 games now. If they do ever somehow figure this thing out, which should not be that difficult, they're going to be wanting to play as many games as possible. The owners are going to want that. The players are going to want that. It's how they make their money. That suggests a compacted schedule. And if they're cramming games in to get as many games in as possible, I don't see them taking a 5-day break for an All-Star game or a 4-day break even. So I think the chances of the All-Star game being played here this season are extremely thin. And then it turns into it's not coming here, excuse me, probably next year because of the Olympics. So when? Maybe 2015? I don't know what the league has planned in that respect. But, yeah, that's the latest blow for Blue Jackets fans.
Aaron, back to Davidson. If you had to categorize, you know, what kind of stamp he'll put on this organization, what do you think that would be, maybe the biggest change or something of that ilk?
Yeah, you know what, just talking to people who know him well and have been with him through the years in hockey, the first thing that they come back to is that this guy, as much as anybody in the league, knows how to establish culture. And that's something that the Blue Jackets have struggled with ever since that first-year team that played so far above its head and really had that it factor that becomes the sum being greater than its mm-hmm. parts. That has been missing here ever since then. They tried. They thought they had it the year that they made the playoffs. That quickly fizzled. They fired Ken Hitchcock the next year. I do think he's going to bring some people in here, and this isn't him saying it. This is just me surmising. I think there's some people that he really thinks can help, and I think there will be change here in Columbus. I think the first thing you'll see, though, is him getting everybody on board. He's already met with, obviously, the hockey operations staff, but he met with the entire staff at the Blue Jackets on Friday. The way that he operates is that at first everyone gets on board. Everyone has a clean slate. This is the goal. Everybody has to do their job in a world-class fashion. And then he sits back and he observes. And you find out pretty quickly who is interested in becoming a team player, who's pushing all in the same direction, and who isn't. And if you talk to people who have known John Davidson for a long time, the people who are not pulling in the same direction, they're weeded out of the process. They're gone. And so we'll see exactly how this plays out, if the people here are people here he can work with. Again, I don't see radical change, but I do think everything's on the table, and he certainly has the authority and the autonomy to do what he sees fit. This is his club now.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch. We're discussing the Blue Jackets' hiring of John Davidson as the new president of hockey operations. Aaron, head coach Todd Richards, how does he fit into this entire picture? Is he also going to be, you know, evaluated by John Davidson, the sort of a clean slate, and then they'll go from there?
Yeah, you know, I think he's fine. I mean, he was given the full-time job this summer. It would be very strange, I think, to elevate him from interim to head coach in the summer and then have you dismiss him. He's got I think 3 years left on his contract now. One thing that must be said here is Todd Richards has coached before. I think he learned a lesson in Minnesota. I think he learned that things have to be handled a bit of a different way. He has extremely experienced coaches here. Craig Hartsburg, Keith Acton. He's got guys who have done it before for a long time. Head coach is on Craig Hartsburg's resume. Acton's been an assistant coach for a long, long time, has seen a lot of games and a lot of stuff up close and personal. So that's a big difference for him, and I think that's going to help. The coaching staff here now is as experienced as it's been in a very long time. So I think Todd Richards will get exactly what everybody else in the organization will get, which is an opportunity to be himself, to show what he can do, and to express that he's willing to push in the same direction as everybody else. I suspect that's one of the spots in the organization that's probably the safest right now.
Aaron, John Davidson's obviously coming from the St. Louis Blues, the Central Division, the same division as the Columbus Blue Jackets, and then obviously he also has familiarity with the New York Rangers, and obviously the Columbus Blue Jackets are going to have a lot of Rangers when the season restarts. Did that give him a leg up on other candidates, if there were, because he has so many familiarities with, you know, the division and the former Rangers?
You know what? I don't think that had anything to do with it. I really don't. I think there were no other candidates. This was not a process of interviewing people and seeing who fit best. This was a process that I think started last season when the Blues were sold and everybody knew they were going to be sold, and there was much speculation that changes were coming. Look at that Blues front office. It was overstocked with people, unlike most medium to small markets typically are. I think the process was, holy voice, John Davidson might be available. And they went from there. They began this courtship, this recruitment, if you will. They talked to him back in May. They did everything they could to show him that this was a place that you can win. This is a place that can be special when you get it all together. There are people waiting to cheer. But this was less of an interview process and more of a recruitment. This is a guy whose reputation precedes him. I've never heard anybody say an ill word of him. This is the kind of guy, I think, you want to start an organization with. If anyone had the foresight in 1999 or 2000, he would be the perfect guy to start a franchise in a city. Obviously, that wasn't made, but in a sense, this is starting to come off as a rebirth, a renewal of the Blue Jackets, and that's what it feels like to a lot of people.
Aaron, final question here. If you have to look into your crystal ball, In 2 years' time, how do you see the Columbus Blue Jackets front office looking?
That's a tough question. I think you'll see new people brought in. I think you'll see many of the same faces here. I think you'll see roles redefined. That's really the question right now is, what does John Davidson want to do, and how does Scott Housen fit in that picture? What will be, how will those roles be divided? You know what, Larry Plo was in St. Louis when John Davidson got there. He's still in St. Louis in some capacity. His job has changed. I think that that sort of scenario is possible. I know it sounds ridiculous to say, I don't think the people who work for the Blue Jackets are bad people. I don't think they don't deserve to be in hockey. There's a lot of good people here, good hockey people here. It's just that for so long, this organization was so far behind other organizations in having those kind of people at the top. A real void where even teams that they competed with, that you look at Detroit in the front office and the litany of expertise and experience they have at the top, St. Louis and even Nashville, and Columbus was really far behind in that respect. And I think until ownership recognized that, this is how it happened. When that light bulb turned on for them and they said, boys, we need help, not to replace somebody. We need to add people here. We need more people in the kitchen. It's not too crowded here. It's not full enough. So let's bring in a great leader of men, John Davidson, and see where this goes.
Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch. I'd say we'll see you in Winnipeg in the middle of December, but I'm not that confident about that happening.
Let's meet midway, like in St. Paul or something.
sounds like a good plan. Aaron, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, guys. Always a good time.
Take care, Aaron. Thanks very much. Quick update from the Bomber game. End of the first quarter, the Bombers are down 15, and Buck Pierce is injured, and Joey Elliott's into the game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our friend from the Columbus Dispatch, Aaron Portsline, for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. This segment of the show is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences, not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you remain secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty can be reached at 230-6129. David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. When you give him a call, tell him the, Illegal Curve sent you.
Right.
That hiring by the Blue Jackets, and again, we are going to have John Davidson, the new president of hockey operations for the Blue Jackets, on in about 35 minutes' time. That hiring by the Blue Jackets is, as we said to Aaron Portsline to start that interview, really does seem like a no-brainer from my perspective. An organization desperately seeking some professionalism and a boost of adrenaline gets it just from having John Davidson's name attached to their organization.
Yeah, it can't be overstated, Drew, and he knows hockey too. But it's a culture change. It's a hockey knowledge. It's the respectability that he'll bring to the organization. It's the infusion of experience into a front office that's pretty bare. Not just on experience, but just people.
Yeah.
And you look at the other organizations and you have a bunch of decision makers, and Columbus really doesn't have that. They need somebody else in there. It doesn't hurt to have more experience. So
yeah, and now you look at the head of around this table, quick poll, Scott Housen, the general manager a year from now?
That's a good question. I need more time on that just because I need to know how they will interact. I would say Davidson's probably more aggressive than Housen. Maybe it'll be a complimentary group there. I don't know.
But you have Davidson. You now have Craig Patrick.
Yes.
I mean, these are hockey men that are professional through and through,
right,
that give your organization credibility.
Now, Housen might stay in the role, but his role may change.
Right, of course, his role may change. But the instant shot of credibility that these guys bring to that team is really a boon for the Columbus organization.
For sure. And it's going to give you respectability not only in the Columbus area, but more so in the hockey world.
That's right. You look at their organization.
Nobody's going to call them trying to poach somebody now.
No, of course not. You can't.
I bet you did it before.
They're not the weak sister anymore. They now have some backbone to them. You can't look at that organization and say, hey, it's being run by, you know, guys who we don't tremendously respect. Perhaps we think we can abuse them a little bit.
Right.
You know, now it's, well, John Davidson's there, so you don't. Watch out, because you know JD knows what he's doing.
Exactly, and it wasn't a money issue in saying. Well, it was a money issue in terms of the new ownership, but it wasn't in terms of a job he did. It wasn't a matter of John Davidson didn't do good work in St. Louis. He did great work.
John Davidson was worth every penny to the St. Louis Blues.
He came into St. Louis when Dave Checkitz was there. Dave Checkitz being the former president of Madison Square Garden, them being close friends. Checkitz group goes out, new ownership comes in. They try and cut some salary from the front office, and his capability is unquestioned. And I think when you add somebody like that into an organization that's just been in a tailspin ever since they really came into the league, aside from that 1 year, you know, 2 years, the first year when they maybe overachieved, and the second year, not the second year, but the other year when they got swept by Detroit in four, making the playoffs for the only time.
They've never won a playoff game. It's been how many years now?
And I really, you know, we asked Aaron Portzine about the difference between John Davidson's now. John Davidson's clock starts now, so he probably wants something to get good in 3 to 4 years. Does that not correspond with the fans being like, well, we've waited 12 years, 13 years? They're going to have to wait a little bit longer because the guy in charge now can be trusted more than the people they had before, because you can see the track record. Now, it doesn't mean you need a track record to be successful, but it certainly helps inspire confidence in a fan base in this particular situation.
Well, you now look at their team. Look at it on ice. I mean, they finally dealt Rick Nash. And they finally, and then, you know, they made the poor decision to trade for Jeff Carter, and then they traded him to Los Angeles. You look at the team, and it's still a long way to go, but there are some building blocks there that you can certainly work with.
For sure.
Right. And to get back to your original question, though, I mean, I it doesn't look good for Scott Housen, let's put it that way. It doesn't, when a guy like John Davidson comes in, even though it's all speculation whether he's going to be, you know, gone in a year or 2 years or whatever, but. You know, in my opinion, Scott Housen is one of the worst general managers in the NHL. I mean, that's my personal opinion. A lot of the moves he's made haven't been good. That's, you know, again, that's my opinion. Getting back to that, Drew, I mean, he's coming in to a situation where, you know, they finally traded Rick Nash. Everyone could see that for a long time that, you know, Columbus isn't going anywhere. They've been one of the worst teams for a long time now. And, you know, he's coming to a team where, especially on defense. I mean, they've got issues in goal, and they're not very deep on forward. But you had the second overall pick. You've got Ryan Murray. Mm-hmm. You've got Jack Johnson. They've got good players.
You got Timmy Erickson now in the system. David Savard's got some offensive talent. You have John Moore's a great skater, big guy. So you have some pieces there.
There's pieces, and this year they're not going to. They're at best an eight seed in the playoffs, but I would say they're not going to make the playoffs this coming year if there is a season or next year. But There's room to grow there, and I think a guy like John Davidson will come there, and like Richie mentioned, that teams aren't going to call Columbus and poach players. But let's be honest, too, like the New York Islanders, we're going to get into their move later on in the show to Brooklyn, but again, Columbus is not a desired city for hockey players. I mean, if it was, Rick Nash would have stayed there, and it's not, again, anything against the city, because I've heard that Columbus is a fine city, but as a hockey organization, there was a lot of instability there. And
you don't blame the fans. You know, the fans there are good fans.
They have a strong fan base there. Great fans, but the problem is, you mentioned that, Drew, well, they haven't won a series. They've only made the playoffs once.
They have never won a series. They haven't won a game in the playoffs.
No, sorry, pardon me. Yeah. They've never won a game. And, you know, but there's never the Columbus Blue Jackets. You know, aside from Rick Nash, there hasn't been much to hope about there. And when you have a guy like Ryan Murray, who's currently playing for the Everett Silvertips, he's going to be a very good defenseman. And you have a lot of good prospects there. I like Jack Johnson. I think he's better suited for a situation like Columbus than L.A. I think there was a little bit too much pressure on him. So I think, you know, whether or not Scott Housen's going to be gone in a year, I think more importantly you should focus on that. John Davidson is a fantastic hire. And he's only going to make that team better.
Only the Bombers can throw an interception, have a flag, take it back, and then on the next play throw another interception.
It's true. better off listening to us than watching the Bombers on TSN right now. But, you know, just keep the video on TSN and the audio on TSN 1290, and you get the best of both worlds. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk to the New York Islanders, and still to come, John Davidson, new president of hockey operations of the Columbus Blue Jackets. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock, producer Tim, and Remus, for all those keeping track at home, has shown up and has provided us with a smorgasbord of candy. Would be described as a smorgasbord, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked, well done.
Remus tasted the difference so much last night at Carbone, he couldn't show up on
time. That's true. Remus was at Carbone last night, and that contributed to him not being here on time for the very early 12 noon start.
So it might, you know, we might have missed Remus for half an hour, but as long as
missed is a bit of a strong word.
As long as we're making our sponsors happy, that's all that matters.
Well, that's all that matters. Actually, I'll give Remus credit. He was supporting one of our sponsors to the detriment of his role on the show.
That's true.
So, you know, I'll give him a little bit of credit for that.
Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor. Pizza baked, well done.
Apparently I've been replaced, but well done. Not lockout news, relocation news in the NHL, sort of. The New York Islanders, who've been playing on the...
Is that a relocation? We were there last year. By the way, Drew, you were interviewed by Newsday.
It's true. Last year I was.
Drew's a newsmaker.
Yeah. It's sort of something an interesting like question, Ezzy. The question is, will people on Long Island, I mean, will people that in Nassau County go to Brooklyn to see New York Islanders games in Brooklyn? And for the record, for the geographically challenged, they are... It is still the same island. They're still on the same island. They're just at different ends of the island.
Is it the same borough?
No, it's not the same borough.
There's five boroughs.
It's five boroughs. Right. It's a different borough.
Long Island is Staten Island, right?
No, that's two different islands.
No, Long Island is Long Island.
Is that a borough? I thought Staten Island was a borough.
Staten Island is a borough.
Yeah, but it's not.
Staten Island, Brooklyn, Manhattan.
Queens.
What's the other one? There's five. That's
four. Is the Bronx a borough?
Yeah, Bronx.
Yeah.
Long Island's not a borough, then.
I think it's one of the boroughs.
So what borough? I was under the impression it was about 25 miles between Brooklyn and Long Island. Is that about right?
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. And apparently you get the right of mass transit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's not that far.
No,
I mean,
and that's my question. If you lived close to the Nassau County Coliseum, which is a very suburban area.
Far away. It's an hour away from downtown New York.
From Manhattan. It's about an
Manhattan,
hour.
Manhattan, the Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island. We're correct. Yeah. Yeah.
It's about an hour from Manhattan to Nassau County Coliseum.
Well, the problem is, this helps us because we were there last year for your Trent's bachelor party.
That's right.
But this is
I'm still paying off my credit card.
That's right. Yeah. The problem is that, you know, when we went from Manhattan, where we stayed, right across from Madison Square Garden, and we went to Long Island, we took the train, we get off, and there's no direct train transportation to the arena. So you have to take the train, and you have to wait for a cab, and you have to cab from the train station to Nassau because it's too far to walk.
That's right.
So there's no direct communication, direct transportation. Now, from what I've read, you know, about this, and Larry Brooks wrote about it in the New York Post, and even he was in favor of it. I mean, he's in favor of something. Dear God. And he said in his article, he said even, you know, there's direct transportation from Long Island.
You can take the train. The last stop on the Long Island Railroad, which is where you would have to go from to get to the Nassau County Coliseum. Mm-hmm. You jump on the Long Island Railroad and it'll take you right
to
the Barclays Arena, the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. So it's one train. You get on the train. You get off the train.
And they're not changing the name, correct?
They are not changing the name, from what I understand.
Yeah, right.
If you're in downtown Manhattan, so you're at Madison Square Garden, you're at Penn Station or wherever, and you can take the train directly to this new arena, it just makes a lot of logistical sense.
Right.
The question is, will the diehard New York Islanders fan want to make that train ride in?
See, now, I think you know, I'll let Richie get into here too. I think they will, and I think so too, actually. I have very, very, you know, good things to say about, you know, New York's obviously one of the greatest cities in the world, if not the greatest city. I like Winnipeg too, but just to throw that in there for all the Jets fans listening. But, you know, their fans were really impressive, and that was a cool arena. I realize it's antiquated and it's outdated, but it really reminded me of the Winnipeg Arena, to be honest with you. One of those, you know, 50s arenas, like the last of the 50s arenas. And
which is all nice and good, but that's not sugarcoated. Okay. That arena was a dump.
Okay, hold on.
Yes.
But hold on. But you know that I live in a dump, so hold on a second. I'm old school, and I like those old arenas. It's good for nostalgia.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
It's nostalgic, for nostalgic purposes. Now, let me finish. for money-making purposes, right. Yeah. they're out of that arena. As soon as that lease is – the day that lease is over, Charles Wang is taking his stuff out of his office, if he has an office at the Uniondale Center. But – Nassau County Coliseum, sorry. But I think they will. The Islanders have a hardcore group of fans, and they've had attendance issues. But, I mean, I agree with you. Like, some of the fans probably would stop going – because first off, the team hasn't been good.
Right.
More so than the arena. You know, and I think they are going to make, you know, the trek to Brooklyn to the Barclays Center. And, Drew, you mentioned the transportation. And I think a good example of where the fans won't follow, and this is a completely different ballgame, but Phoenix, when the team moved from Scottsdale to Glendale.
But different. You have to drive 45 minutes.
You have to drive 45 minutes.
It's not a hockey city like
exactly.
New York is.
So that's the contrast. I think that's where a situation where
history.
If you make it easy enough for people to get there.
I think it's going to work. I think the people who are fans will take, what's the difference? How big of a, you know, would it be a 10-minute drive as opposed to a 20-minute subway ride? Or a train ride, I don't think it's a big deal.
This is fantastic news for the Islanders organization. They, you know, I can't say enough about this because, you know, when we first started the show about 3.5 years ago, remember we were talking about the Lighthouse Project.
Yeah.
And Charles Wang was trying to get the Lighthouse Project, working with the state of New York and the city, and that thing was not happening. I mean, that thing was way too ambitious. And now you've got the Barclays Center, which is going to be is already home to the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah.
And I mean, this makes perfect sense. This is going to save the organization.
And he's not, he obviously doesn't own the Barclays Center, so he's going to be a tenant there.
Yeah.
Yep. And again, he didn't own the, you know, Nassau County Coliseum, so he was a tenant there as well.
They have a huge TV deal, the Islanders, remember that?
That's just it. The TV deal for the Islanders
MSG. Is huge.
It's SNY.
That's right.
It's SNY. Yeah. Sorry. Sports Network New York?
Yeah.
Yeah. The TV deal that which is sort of hard to wrap your head around because nobody really thinks about the Islanders having a strong fan base. They do have a strong fan base.
Yep.
It's just that it's been sort of an abused fan base, but, you know, especially in the New York market, your TV deal is going to be worth a huge amount for any professional sport.
Again, right? I don't want to compare it, you know, but, you know, the Islanders remind me a little bit of the Expos in a sense. I realize it's a completely different sport, but the reason why the Expos didn't work out was partly to do with the Olympic Stadium, which, as we know, was crumbling. But the team was bad, and they were losing all of their players on a regular basis to free agency. Larry Walker, everybody remembers all those guys. And in the Islanders, I mean, this has been written about by Craig Custance and other writers in New York, actually. I mean, players didn't want to go there.
You're right. They had to. Any free agent that went there generally was.
I think the games were actually on MSG Plus, so as he's right, it's MSG.
Okay.
Wow. Oh, hold on. Can we get some music? I'm right. I'm right.
Can you got guys some music, Timmy?
Hold on.
Do you have Hallelujah?
That's almost like when I predicted the Devils would beat the Flyers last year in the second round, and everybody made fun of me, but it happened. But, you know, I guess I've been right twice in my life.
This is the second
broken
time.
Clock is right twice a day.
Right? Exactly right.
You're so flummoxed by the fact that I was right that you don't know where to go.
Also, the Bombers just botched a punt. That equally
okay,
flummoxed.
Why would that flummox you, Drew?
Yeah, you're right. I should expect.
Saying the word flummox is always fun.
Yeah. The TV contract is big there. It's the arena. The only issues I think are the arena was not properly designed for hockey. Now, they're probably going to emulate the Jets model in that they're hoping that a smaller arena, and this will be the smallest arena in the NHL, 14,500 seats for hockey.
Right, and we've proven that's perfectly fine in Winnipeg.
Well, they're going to go under the, maybe this team will become very popular, there won't be any tickets available, and they'll create a demand that way, supply, you know, sort of basic supply and demand in that sense. That's an ideal situation. But back to the free agency thing you were talking about, nobody wanting to go play for the Islanders because of their terrible facilities and everything along those lines. Now, if you're playing in Brooklyn, it's really like you're playing.
It's a fresh start.
It's like you're playing, you know, in New York City, in Manhattan, almost. So there's a lot bigger. There's a lot greater of an appeal in becoming a free agent that goes and plays, you know, in Manhattan, even if it's not for the Rangers per se.
You hope this would then result in the Islanders getting a radio deal that would
not on Hofstra University Hofstra Radio
University.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was a bad organization. It was just had nothing going for it.
Well, still is. The people in charge are still the same. So, but hopefully this will revitalize the fan base.
And again, I gotta just mention that again, you know, talking about the Montreal Expos. And you know, we've been following sports our entire lives. These are classic organized. I mean, the Islanders were a model franchise in the 80s, 70s and 80s. I mean, this is a team that won four Stanley Cups in a row. But let's be honest here. They were lame duck in that arena. The fans are great and the organization has run well, but they've had just, I mean, nightmare after nightmare with the Rick DiPietro contract and Yashin and all that. So, I mean, this is perfect timing. And it's nice to see this happening during this lockout because, to be honest with you, the Islanders were one of the lowest revenue-generating teams, and this is really going to help with that. So it's nice to know, okay, you can look at Long Island and say, okay, this team, you know, is moving to Brooklyn in a couple of years. This is going to be a strong franchise. You can't say that about Phoenix right now. So it's nice to know that one of those franchises that was struggling, you know, is probably going to turn the corner and get their act together, right?
We will see. Time will tell. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shortly past 1:15 in the afternoon, I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim does his job behind the mic like the expert that he is. Still to come in about 12 minutes' time, new president of hockey operations of the Columbus Blue Jackets, John Davidson, is going to join us. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, very close to being sold out, both shows. Rory Scovell is on stage tonight, his final night in Winnipeg. You can get tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com or by giving the club a call at 204-488-4520. Rory Scovell tonight at Rumors, 488-4520 to get tickets. Gentlemen, what is the Canadian Hockey League Players Association?
Well, I'll let Richie get in here, but obviously we know George Larac is involved.
Don't let me get in because I don't know.
Let me ask you this.
I don't think this, by the way, I don't think Dave Branch and the CHL fully know. But they did release.
Yeah, they don't know either.
They released, I believe there's 10 people on the board. There's a lawyer. I believe his name is Howard Pink. Is that correct?
I don't have that name anywhere, but I'll try to
bring it up here. But I think his name is Howard Pink, and he was involved with the NHLPA before. Hold on, let me bring this up here. There was an article about this. I believe he's involved, and they finally released who was part of this group. But this news that came out through another lawyer that they're going to be suing, and I believe they started off.
They sued the Halifax Mooseheads,
right, I was
going
to say that, the QMJHL. You know who plays with the Halifax Mooseheads?
Nathan McKinnon.
And don't think I suspect they did that on purpose. The Canadian Hockey League Players Association, which says it represents Junior A players, has threatened to sue the Ontario Hockey League and the Canadian Hockey League as a whole over what it says are violations of minimum legislative employment standards. Basically, that the CHL is not paying their players minimum wage, overtime, vacation, severance pay, things of that nature. Sort of the employment standards that you expect in the course of day-to-day society. Now, the junior hockey league players in Canada are paid a small weekly stipend, and there is a education component as well. Do you think that the junior hockey players in Canada are in need of a players association? Keep in mind, they are technically professional hockey players. Once you play in the Canadian Hockey League, you are not eligible to go play in the NCAA because you've given up your amateur status.
Yeah, that's right. Everybody knows that, yeah. I mean, fair enough, Drew. Do I think they need a players association? Maybe they do need one. Do I think this is the answer? It seems to be a hodgepodge of people putting together stuff and filing a suit already. I mean, who's on board? From what I've read, they will go into locker rooms and say, sign here, sign here, sign here, and a bunch of the players sign there.
Right.
I mean, who's taking advantage of who here?
I certainly think that...
How much are they making? That's another issue. The question is, apparently they've been making a hefty sum, people, on this the CHLPA.
Well, but where are they getting that money from?
Who's in charge? Where are they getting the money from? I mean, these are questions that don't they need to be answered?
I think so. I think having George Larac involved with this, they lose credibility.
For sure.
I want to step in right here. I mentioned his name was Howard Pink. It's actually Ron Pink.
Okay.
He served on the NHLPA's advisory board. This is an article that was published yesterday by James Myrtle, who we found on the show before. But I agree with Richie. I mean, we were talking about this, I believe, about 6 weeks ago when this first came out, and the motives behind this are if the motives are coming from players and they've approached George Larac, or if this was initiative that was coming from George Larac and Ron Pink, and then I believe there's another, there's a few lawyers involved, and there's also, I think, some people with, there's a lot of lawyers involved here on this board. But, I mean, the way they're going about this is a little bit weird, because they're saying, first off, Dave Branch is you know, commented on the record about this, but he's said that, I want to know who's on the board and what's going on. I want to have a meeting before here. And
well, let me ask you this. We don't think that George Larac being involved adds any credibility to the organization.
That's fair.
Secondly, instead of negotiating, they immediately file suit.
That's right.
That doesn't help their cause at all and give them any sort of credibility.
As far as I can tell, they don't have anything in order right now.
Right.
And it takes a lot of nerve to immediately file suit. Maybe if they are serious about, you know, protecting the...
What if they're filing suit and then paying themselves for the time they're spending on the suit?
Well, I'm sure that they're not going broke as a result of this. No. I'm sure that they're looking out after themselves in it, certainly. But, you know, maybe they... You know, if there is a case to be that these players need representation, maybe the CHL, mm-hmm. which, you know, to I think its credit seems to be a relatively forward-thinking organization, sure. You know, maybe they need to sit down with the CHL. Maybe the CHL is willing to negotiate some changes
yes.
to the betterment of the players.
Absolutely.
As opposed to immediately, you know,
well, the one
threatening
thing
them
about,
at the point of a bayonet.
We've talked about in the past is, you know, maybe expanding the ability to attend school.
Right.
You know, for example, I think it's 2 years where if you don't use it, then immediately yeah. you lose your school credit. What about
get rid of
try and be professionals for a while? Maybe you leave it until they're 25 or something. Or
Richie,
26.
This is another problem, too, and we were talking about this off air. I mean, we've known friends of ours that have tried out for WHL teams before. We've had people on the show that have yep. played in the WHL before. These guys don't get treated pretty well. And junior teams, especially the major junior, talking OHL, WHL, QMJHL, these guys are treated pretty well. And they are run, a lot of these teams are owned by former NHLers, Windsor Spitfires, Bob Bugner. The Kamloops Blazers, yeah. I believe you've got Iggy, Niedermeyer,
yeah,
all
the
these
Hunters
guys.
In London.
The Hunters in London. A lot of these teams are owned by NHLers. They're run, and they're for-profit, and they're run, and they get good support in these towns. But the problem here is you can't just look at it like these guys shouldn't be getting minimum wage, because these guys aren't working at Tim Hortons here. These guys are being given... travel is paid for.
That's right.
Equipment is paid for. I mean, these guys
put up billeted.
They're putting up in a billet.
Food.
This is a completely different. You can't just look at it like
yeah,
the fact
right.
that they have a
education later on.
Education later on. I mean, the CHL is you have guys coming over from Europe that want to play in the OHL or the WHL to have a better chance at making the NHL. For these guys to come out and say that they're being treated like. What did they say? Slave shop work? I mean, that's ridiculous.
Minimum wage for 40 hours a week for the whole year is going to get your salary. Your salary would be about $20,000, just under $21,000.
Right.
You know, what about that angle? Are they been giving close to $20,000, if not more, of compensation?
Well, the CHL says
that it'll happen, right? Because they'll start, if the PA wants them to pay, then okay, buy your own sticks.
Well,
buy
exactly.
your own equipment.
Pay taxes.
Pay for the travel. Pay taxes on that $21,000, close to that. you know, a lot goes along with that. Buy your own food, see you later, stipend, and all that stuff. So it's a slippery slope here.
The CHL says that their estimated investment for each player
yep.
is $35,000 to $40,000 annually, mm-hmm. which includes an education program and yep. other benefits.
Okay, and that's slave shop conditions?
It's not slave shop conditions in my mind.
Yep.
You know, certainly there are areas that need improvement in the...
Absolutely.
That's when you negotiate. You don't just immediately file.
You don't sue the league and say that they're not being paid minimum wage and they're being treated like slave shop workers.
And with all due respect, if there were players who really do feel as though they're being abused, I think you would hear from them, especially if they, you know, leave the CHL or they don't make the NHL. They have
yeah,
no reason to
right.
keep quiet.
That's right. The CHL is a well-oiled machine.
It's also a big moneymaker. It is
a big moneymaker, and it's the number one feeder, along with the NCAA, for the NHL, but it's a bigger feeder to the NHL. And again, these guys should be meeting with Dave Branch and the commissioner of the WHL, QMJHL, OHL, and sitting down and going over the issues and saying, we're going to start a union, and we would like to renegotiate the bargaining agreement between that exist in this league.
Well, there is no
examine it.
Yeah, there's no. I mean, there is no bargaining agreement.
Examine the standards and speak about
I didn't
them.
Mean bargaining agreement. Yeah. I meant more so
full disclosure, room of negotiations. Yeah. I mean, have you not contacted
labor
the people?
Whatever.
I mean, have they not taken you? There's a lot of angles here. It doesn't seem like the most well-oiled machine. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, right. It does not. And it seems like it might be more of an avenue for some people who like to see their name in headlines.
Yes.
Get their name
George
in
Larac.
Headlines. Yeah, I thought George Larac is still the deputy leader of the Green Party in Canada or something like that. He's a guy whose career was never anything to write home about, but who was a very good self-promoter who made himself out to be a lot more than he actually was.
That's right.
Got to throw in, though, Larac is an extremely tough guy, well-liked by his teammates, does a lot of good charity work.
I don't think he's well-liked by his teammates, has he?
Yeah, I don't. I have a guy who talks loud but doesn't carry a big stick, I think is the opposite of a guy who's going to be liked by his teammates.
Okay.
Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, new president of hockey operations for the Columbus Blue Jackets, John Davidson, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.